Have a listen to this.
I don't know what a tracker mortgage is.
I don't know how to save money on my car insurance.
I don't understand.
Now I do know what a tracker mortgage is. Back at the height of the Celtic Tiger, the big Irish banks couldn't give away mortgages quickly enough. Competition for customers was fierce, and good value tracker mortgages were leading the way. With a tracker, your mortgage tracked the European Central Bank's rate, plus small margin for the bank. That was supposed to be clear and upfront. Trackers were a magnet for hard-pressed homeowners. More than 400,000 of us had one at a time when the housing market was on fire. Then in 2008, the crash happens.
The jaw-dropping slide in Irish bank shares is unprecedented.
Fortunes have been wiped out.
We bail out the banks.
It's time for action, swift and decisive.
And everything changes. The banks start looking for their trackers back. Years later, the central bank will order them to pay back over 1 billion euros in fines and compensation.
Shame on you! Shame on you! Shame on you!
It's a staggering revelation that you can just find another 6,000 affected customers overnight.
We have apologised several times before and I apologise again.
We've apologised unequivocally.
This is the inside story of Ireland's tracker mortgage scandal. The single biggest overcharging scandal in the history of the state. Some of those most affected are still hurting today.
At one point, the bank started talking to us about maybe putting the house back on the market.
It escalated so bad that one night I woke up and I had had a stroke in my sleep.
And they want answers.
Homeowners were overcharged by their lenders.
We believe that some of the banks have been dragging their feet in solving this problem.
Yeah, there you go. That is a little bit of the introduction to the programme last night. Trackers, the people versus the banks on RTE. A remarkable part one of that programme and that sprawling, unfolding story that we've covered on this programme and many media outlets, such as the shocking nature of it as it developed over the last, I suppose, decade and a half or so. And with me on the line is a man who featured heavily in last night's programme, and that is Lizelton Mann and Padraig Hassan of Padraig Hassan Financial Services. Padraig, good morning to you and thanks for joining me on the programme this morning. How do you feel after watching part one of that programme?
Listen, it was superbly put together. I think it was it captured, I suppose, the challenge it was and, you know, what people were doing and what they were having to go through. I mean, it was, I suppose, the title of it is really what was important to me, was because I don't think the effects the entire matter had on the people that were being overcharged was ever told properly. You had the reports, you had the record fines imposed by the central bank, but the people's story was never really captured, as in the stories that I was listening to here in my office and the tears and the angst and the difficult period that it was, because it was aligned at the very same time as probably the worst economic crash that ever hit the country, and that meant public service workers got lost overtime, bonuses were taken off, and people's income suffered, taxes went up because the country was in a crashed state. They were basically taken over by the Troika, and so much happened. And then at the same time, the banks that we bailed out were overcharging their customers, and deliberately, in my view, as it always has been. And so I suppose a lot of indication for what was an enormous period of work and effort that took thousands and thousands of hours, Jerry, at the time. But I knew it was wrong. I've always said this: who told me what a tracker mortgage was? Like the guy on the bus, it was the banks themselves that told me what a tracker mortgage was. I didn't make it up. And when they were challenged, it was always from their perspective they responded. It was never from the perspective of the customer. And I always thought that that was wrong.
The governor of the central bank, Patrick Honohan, was talking about it during the program, and you got a sense on one level that, look, this was happening when there were so many fires everywhere else in the Irish economy, particularly when it came to banking. He said, look, this stuff wouldn't have been on my desk every day. I was more concerned at the time with the survival of the banks. But there were people working, but Charlie Weston, Irish Independent financial correspondent as well, financial affairs correspondent, saying, look, that, you know, there was a sense from the central bank at the time that this, it just wasn't a priority. Was that because they were more focused on the banks, or was it that they just didn't have a tradition of looking out for customers? Well, and they trusted the banks way too much?
I mean, he basically said last night, and when he was being recorded for the programme, he prioritised the banks ahead of their customers. He did what the banks were doing themselves in one respect. He didn't see it as important enough, that it was more important to save the banks. But at what cost, as I said before, in challenging some of the banks, why didn't you ask for more money instead of doing what you did? I mean, as I've said to in many cases, when it's homes and when it's home ownership that's challenged in overcharging of that basis, and I said this at an Oireachtas presentation, they use our Irishness against us, because there's an inherent pride in owning a house and hanging on to that house and trying to make ends meet to make sure you can afford a house, and everyone wants to try and have a nice house, etc. So they're really challenged matters that were uniquely in many ways to Irish people, that owning a home was the drive, the reason we're educated, the reason we work hard. That's the dream for a lot of people. And to then go at the fabric of that makeup was a clear wrong. But it clearly said when the governor was speaking that his priority was saving the banks. It should have been aligned with and make sure that they're behaving right at the same time. You can't go and save the banks and then, and he admitted that he probably was too trusting of the banks. But I mean, it was a failure, an absolute abject failure on their part, not to, because they were written to by an original ombudsman in 2009 who said there may be an issue here. And I mean, to get it to the investigation part, I mean, I had representatives, some banks came into my office, and one guy stood up over me and said, there will be nobody going back to Tracker.
That's what they were saying. That's how fast and loose, to use his words, that the banks were playing it with people at a time when everybody was under pressure, desperate pressure. Was such pressure eventually that one of those Tracker customers had a stroke because of the pressure they were under.
Yeah, I mean, they're like, there's been an awful lot of brave couples, because remember, to come out public, no more than myself, you hang yourself out as well, because there's plenty of people to knock you. And those brave people who came, particularly the four that came to the Oireachtas with me some years ago, and then to come on the show and talk about what are very private matters, I mean, they're remarkable. And I know Thomas and Claire, they're now dear friends of mine, and they're a fantastic couple, and like a lovely couple. But then you see the effect it had on the kids. And the scary thing, Jerry, is the examples that are going to be in the second and were there last night are not the worst. I have 10 times worse than those that you just couldn't ask these people to go on a show and talk about what happened, because it's absolutely scary what came to my office. And to remit, one was, I'm only here because the rope snapped. And I mean, that's how bad it got for people who felt it was their fault, because the banks were telling them, well, you fixed and you weren't going back to Tracker, and it's of your own making. And in the meantime, the banks have got, as some of the banks got, 26 billion and 63 billion in total bailout. And then the government start imposing additional taxes on the very customers that bailed out the banks, and they're being overcharged out the other door. If it was a thief doing it at a house and taking 350, 400, 1,000 euro per month out of your bank, out of your bag in the kitchen, it would be theft. But and it was always a question raised, was this deliberate and so forth. I never concentrated on that aspect of it. I just wanted to make sure that anyone that was entitled to go back to Tracker should go back to Tracker. And really the compensation, and I'm always annoyed probably at the amount, the total cost. It's a great figure to put out, but the majority of that was the people's own money.
Yeah.
And that's a point that can be forgotten.
It certainly can. There was a moment then when you kind of knew from what you were reading and your just general basic understanding of it that what they were doing was wrong. You took your first initial complaints and you know, all seven of them came back. This is the financial ombudsman at the time that you were dealing with for the first time yourself, wondering, look, what's going to happen here? But they came back, I think it was against Ulster Bank, and said, yeah, you're 100% right. The bank is 100% wrong. But that just was the start of a long saga of fighting inch by inch to get the banks to admit and understand and deal properly with people.
I mean, like, I'll never forget the day the letters came in. We then had to wait 20 days or 25 days or whatever to see would they appeal it to the High Court, because it was clearly obvious there was going to be more of them than just my seven, and I had lots of others that were here. I mean, that particular bank then set up a complaints handling centre. We've got a fantastic title of a department if there was no wrong in the first place. But when it came in, the decision, there was really the wording of the decision was so important in those words where they described the form. So us, the bank, were relying on a form, and I relied on the very same form. So we were both making the same argument, but from different angles. And he described it as ambiguous, vague, misleading, imprecise, confusing. And it was a very strong decision. And following that, and I didn't know that it was going to be as widespread as it was at the time. And then when it moved to, I just knew, something said to me, there has to be more of these out there, not just my own clients, and who is acting on their behalf. And that's when I ran the ad, and as I said on the program, and then the fun began, because it was quite extraordinary at the time. I mean, the amount of phone calls and emails and contacts, and I was on, I don't know how long, Jerry, you and I have been speaking on the matter, but it's been over many years, like we're on the journey together at times. But they came from everywhere, and more importantly, they came from every bank. And that's when the jigsaw pieces started to have to be put together, and that wasn't easy.
Yeah, it certainly wasn't, and it took a long time. And banks, as the then Taoiseach Leo Varadkar was saying, were dragging their feet and all of this. Do you think, Páirc, that lessons have been learned by the financial institutions of the state from this, or could this happen again? And also, allied to that, the central bank itself, there was a perception that the central bank, obviously, he was too trusting of the banks, as Patrick Holland said, but that really, when it came to consumer protection, it was way down the list of priorities, if there at all. So can we at least say that that might have changed? No.
I think because I'm also on the Irish Banking Culture Board with the three main banks who have directors on it as well, and an awful lot of good work has been done. I think if somebody made a complaint today, how it's handled, it mightn't be upheld or it mightn't be agreed to, but I think how it's handled wouldn't be as dismissive as it was back then. I mean, that's the first important point to make. There's an awful lot of good done, and indeed there was an awful lot of good being done back then by banks, in particularly in community supports, particularly in branch networks, helping elderly and vulnerable customers. Could it happen again? Of course it could happen again. Anyone thinking it couldn't happen again is a fool, because when it's money and it's such an emotive issue, it may not be the banks that do it, but I think the commodity that we talk about here in my office all of the time, the commodity that's of importance today is trust when it comes to people's money. And can you trust what the person is saying to you and challenge that all the time? So I would always give the warning that it would hopefully never happen, particularly to this degree. And you would hope the 1.2 or so billion would be some lesson delivered to the banks. But I would always tell people to be cautious, even if it's just down to the fraud attempts or the defrauding of people that happens every single day of the week with these rogue characters looking to take money from people's accounts, et cetera, et cetera. So people have to be more alert. Maybe that's the message that should be taken rather than could it ever happen again. Maybe just telling people you need to be informed and you need to talk to people who, let's say, you can trust in terms of the advice they're giving you, and whether that's pension, whether that's saving, whether that's cover, whether that's mortgage, it is important. And I think the commodity of trust probably should take a far greater importance in when people are dealing with their money. In terms of the banks and the localized banks, I would think that an awful lot of those people were equally ashamed by what had occurred from their hierarchy and their head offices. because they were getting a lot of the brunt at the face of the counter, and they never did anything either. And indeed, many of those staff also lost their tracker rates and couldn't say anything because they were employed by the same bank that was taking it off them. So yeah, it's an important question, but I think I would probably phrase the answer a little bit different, that the four, the five, the brave people who've spoken on the programme, in other words, there's nothing to be ashamed of here, but if you think you're alone, then the shame is nearly inbuilt, and it doesn't need to be like that all of the time and come and talk. I think if the banks get a complaint in now, how they will handle it initially, they might at least put eyes of the consumer as well as their own position to a complaint.
Yeah, yeah. Pádraig, final point. Does this underline at that moment for you that copper fastened your belief was the result of the financial ombudsman's complaint, that initial seven letters that all came in that day? It underlines the importance of having independent regulators, does it? Doesn't it? I mean, when you look at what's happening in for example, and you say, but could this happen again? In the United States at the moment, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau has been totally defunded and almost shuttered. And there's complaints and there's stories about it this week that it's leaving people open to all levels of abuse from large organizations and nowhere to turn to. It underlines in this country that, you know, things can change, and all of a sudden, if regulation goes out, there's no protections there.
It's a hugely important question. Right now, my confidence in that office is at probably an all-time low, in terms of it has gone so legalistic and so difficult for ordinary people to bring complaints that it was intended at the start, and I remember the quotation in the Oireachtas, to address the perceived imbalance of the consumer when challenging his financial institution. It is no longer that simple. And the simple example is a case we won against Ulster Bank. It was appealed to the High Court, and the Ombudsman won it in the High Court. They appealed it to the Court of Appeal, and on a technicality of law, it was won in favour of Ulster Bank. Now, that's 600 or so account holders, and they have sent it back to the Ombudsman for further adjudication, whatever that means. And we have heard nothing in now approaching 2 years. And there are some other cases in there as well, because if somebody used to ask me, was everybody that I felt should be put back on tracker? No, they weren't. There's at least between another 5,000 to 10 that I would have thought, if the proper viewing of the matter from the customer's perspective or the consumer's perspective was applied, they should have been also corrected. And there's lots of cases that I ended up getting some flack for. Well, you didn't get me back my tracker, and you didn't, and you have always got that with the size of the matter that it was. So there would be some people out there who would be looking at this with a bitter irony, saying, well, I didn't get mine back, and why? So there are cases that say they were never corrected, but it's such a difficult process, and the delays. I mean, some of those cases we're dealing with are in there since 2017, and there still hasn't been a result.
Yeah. Yeah, so improvements needed, that's for sure, in that area. So lots to be learned still. Pádraig, listen, we'll leave it there. It's part two, I think, next Monday night.
Part two is next Monday night, 9:35. I'll be watching with trepidation and interest at the same time. Sure.
Indeed, Pádraig, thanks a million for talking to us on the programme this morning. It's Pádraig Hasan there from the Zeltan. Featured heavily last night in that programme, as he would, being a big part of the uncovering and delivering of justice for so many people with this tracker mortgage scandal. If you were watching it, if you have a view, get in touch with us on the programme this morning. We want to hear from you on 0667123666. You can text and WhatsApp us on 083 300 3300. If you were affected by it, if you want to talk to us about your story, then feel free to get in touch.